Hello and welcome to the China Business Group, a podcast from the China Britain Business Council, where we discuss the latest news affecting anyone working in or with the world's second largest economy. I'm Joe Cash, and today I'm joined once again by CBBC's chair, Sir Sherrod Cooper-Coles, who has just returned from both the Labour and Conservative Party conferences. There was a real sense of urgency to party conference season this year, what with everything that's going on in the economy, and both the Conservatives and Labour wanting to win the argument on growth. Of course, boosting trade and investment will be crucial in this regard, so for this episode, we're going to talk through how both parties consider the UK's economic ties with China, as they set to convincing the electorate that they are the party to put the country back on a more even keel. Sherrod, welcome back to the show.
No, well, thank you, Joseph. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
So I guess the place to start is that now that we have a new government under Prime Minister Liz Truss, it seems that both parties are trying to get their foreign policy positions in order, the Conservatives sitting out how it's going to be different, how it's going to maximise on the benefits of Brexit, and the Labour Party, what they're going to do in response. So I suppose the question is, how prominently does China feature in them?
Well, the answer, frankly, Joseph, is on both fronts work in progress. It wasn't just me who attended both party conferences. The chief executive of the China-Britain Business Council, Andrew Seaton, was also there. And he and I spent a lot of time talking quietly to politicians of both parties about China, about its importance as Britain's third largest economic partner. And as you say, you know, there's a lot of turbulence, and it's not just political turbulence, it's now severe economic turbulence, as we've seen with the pressure on the pound, the pressure on UK Treasury bonds known as gilts. And I think it means that there's less heat and noise about China politically, and people realizing just how important engagement with China is for the UK economy. For example, we were in Birmingham, where the headquarters of Jaguar Land Rover, and China is one third of Jaguar Land Rover's business. In Liverpool, we looking east to Yorkshire, which is the home of Burberry. That's again, roughly a third of Burberry's exports are to China. So given the pressures on the UK economy, given the contribution which Chinese students make to higher education, nearly 200,000 Chinese students to British universities, it would be a courageous politician who picked a severe political fight with China at the moment. There are, of course, concerns and noises about some of the big political issues, about human rights, but I really do believe in the new Foreign Secretary, James Cleverly. We have a pragmatist. I know from private discussions with him, he takes a pragmatic view. And so does the new Chancellor of the Exchequer, Kwasi Kwarteng, when it comes to China. And I'll be seeing him in Washington this week in the margins of the IMF meetings. So I wouldn't want to be complacent. But it was notable that, for example, in her speech in the United Nations General Assembly and in her speech at the Conservative Party conference, her formal speech, the Prime Minister Liz Truss did not mention China by name. So I'm in the market for small consolations, and I think we're seeing a degree of common sense and rationality.
And turning our attention away from the Conservatives now to Labour, and you've mentioned that China is bringing benefits not only in London, but across the country more generally. The Labour Party, which many analysts said had a very positive conference, looks set to now try to win back swing seats that turned blue in the last election. And what are known as the Red Wall constituencies in the northeast of England have been some of the biggest beneficiaries of Chinese investment and job creation in recent years. You've already touched on two of those with Jaguar Land Rover and Burberry. So how do you anticipate the need to ensure that China's investment continues to go into these communities, factoring into how Labour is developing its foreign policy?
Well, I have to remain politically neutral, of course, which is why we went to both conferences. But many observers, and you know, certainly the opinion polls suggest that the Labour Party is a government in waiting. And it's been said in America that you campaign in poetry, but and you govern in prose. And as the prospect of government approaches, I would expect the Labour Party to take a more responsible attitude towards China. Britain needs Chinese investment. Britain needs Chinese export markets. Britain needs, and this is perhaps the most interesting thing, Britain needs China's intellectual property. In many of the technologies of the 21st century, and people in America sometimes don't realize this, China has overtaken the West. If you're looking at autonomous vehicles, if you're looking at high-speed rail, if you're looking at battery technology, if you're looking at AI, China is in many respects ahead of the West, and we need Chinese technology. Britain needed it for 5G. We've scored an own goal by reversing the decision on Huawei under pressure from the Americans. But you know, in all these areas, an economy as large as Britain's, and it's still the sixth largest or fifth largest economy in the world, needs to connect with the second largest economy in the world, which is China. And China is, in many ways, an extremely sophisticated, future-leaning economy.
You just touched on some of the geopolitical aspects that will, of course, have to factor into both parties and their foreign policy planning, not least that the relationship with the US is very important to the UK vis-a-vis China. Focusing our attention on a very important policy area for the UK, and particularly at the moment with the economic challenges that the country is facing, given the importance of services exports to the UK, the Treasury plays a key role in UK-China relations. I don't know if you know how the new Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng, views the relationship with China, and whether there are plans within the Treasury to take a similar approach to the US and the EU, where their governments have taken hard stances towards China on situations such as human rights, the South China Sea, but that has not stopped them pursuing licenses for their banks. Do you think that the Treasury will continue to do so within the UK government's broader China strategy?
Well, I hope so, Joseph. Interestingly, officials across Whitehall, not just in the Treasury, but also the Foreign Office, are very interested in maintaining, not necessarily with the same name, and we'll have to wait until after the Party Congress, the economic and financial dialogue with China. It's no secret that we were about to hold such a dialogue, but during the campaign for the leadership of the Conservative Party, Liz Truss attacked her main rival or only rival in the final stages, Rishi Sunak, who was then the finance minister, the chancellor, over plans to have an economic and financial dialogue. And the conclusions which have been negotiated by the British Embassy in Beijing with the Chinese finance ministry, the draft conclusions, were leaked. But talking to officials now, they say that was then, this is now. China is a huge market for British financial and professional services, wealth management products, insurance products, pension products. And they're determined to revive it. And as I said, I have spoken privately to the Chancellor about the importance of this for the UK industry. I mean, financial services is not only Britain's biggest industry, it's also, Joseph, Britain's biggest export industry. And for us to cut ourselves off from a market as large as China, with 500 million middle-class consumers who seem to want Western wealth management products, would be the height of folly. And as you say, the Americans are smart enough to, as they say, walk and chew gum at the same time. There's a lot of sound and fury in Washington, a lot of extreme anti-China rhetoric. but the economic and commercial relationship between the United States and China continues. And certainly Wall Street, the American financial services industry, whether based in New York or California or elsewhere, continues to engage with China.
And if there was one final observation from attending both conferences that struck you about how these parties, their broader general member sentiment is towards China, what would that be?
Well, I think there's a difference between public rhetoric and private rationality. Publicly, you know, if you ask people to go on the record, they make, they're politicians after all, playing to the gallery, so they make noises about political and security issues. If you talk to them privately, all of them recognize that China is a great power, it's a member of the G7, that we cannot solve the problems of climate change, of global public health, and we cannot grow the world economy, let alone the UK economy, without engagement with China. So there's a dichotomy between public rhetoric and private understanding. And, you know, what we're trying to do at the China-Britain Business Council is engage with people quietly, making the case. And we've had some success. We're not doing it just at the party conferences. We're doing it in constituencies around the country, getting the message out in the local media that engagement with China is a win-win situation. It brings jobs to all sorts, all parts of the United Kingdom, all sorts of different industries, but also, of course, it benefits China, Chinese consumers, Chinese investors. And we intend to continue that kind of quiet, evidence-based advocacy.
Well, Sherrod, thank you for coming back on the show and providing this report of how the two party conferences went down. I hope that you managed to get some rest before you head off to the States to the IMF next week.
Yes, but I look very much forward. I'm coming to Hong Kong next month, and I hope next year to be able to come to Beijing and see all my Chinese friends in person.
Hopefully, we will see. But thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Bye-bye. The China Business Brief is a podcast from the China Britain Business Council. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed. To find out more about our events and other activities, please head to our website at www.cbbc.org.